Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
For those of you who don't know that music, you are really in left field. I got to tell you.
Good. You did it.
Yes, I did.
Awesome.
Yes, I did. Hey, thank you for tuning into LA Talk Radio. We are going out live to about 250,000 live people. And then, of course, we'll be podcasting the rest of the time and pick up another 400,000 plus. So we're real happy to be able to do that for you. And my name is Jim Christina, the host of The Writer's Block, on the air with Bobby Jean Bell in good old downtown Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Home of the Balloon Fiesta.
Oh, that's right. You guys are the ones that crash all the airplanes around there.
Oh, what a week. What a week.
You know what, Bobby? I before we really get into the show tonight, I want to pay a little homage to LA Talk Radio. You know, because we're right in the middle of our fifth year with LA Talk Radio, and it's been such a great ride for us. And we have talked to such fantastic authors and read some fantastic books. And it's just been—it's never been an up and a down. It's always been up, 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 up.
Yep. Yes.
And of course, as tonight's guest is also not going to be a downer, she is an upper. But right now, let's hear a little bit about LA Talk Radio. Ronan, if you wouldn't mind.
Hi, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And it's coming your way right now. So sit back, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and enjoy.
And once again, we get to hear the Star Trek theme. And I have to tell you that, of course, LA Talk Radio is just not heard in Los Angeles. It is heard around the world. Isn't that true, Bobby Jean?
Absolutely. That's just one of the things that's so great about it. And so many kinds of programs. You could just spend, all your time.
Well, you could spend all day.
Yeah, you just pull it up on your computer and listen while you're working, and you'll laugh, you'll think, you'll ponder, they're just a tremendous assortment of shows. Everyone has a passion for what they talk about.
Occasionally you get a show that you wonder, how the hell did they get on the air? But, last week, we had, of course, Bob Sousa was on the air with us. And just before the show started, of course, my soundboard went out, and I spent all Saturday, all Sunday getting my computer fixed so we could be on the air tonight. And I finally made it, and I had to do, I have external everything. I have external Wi-Fi. I have external soundboard. I have external everything. So if I have to change it again, it's plug and play.
Yeah. Perfect.
So I am ready to rock and roll. Tonight's guest is, of course, she's no stranger to talk radio, and she's no stranger to being interviewed, but she's an international best-selling author. Catherine Hudson, that's Hutson, has been writing fantasy and sci-fi since 2000. She just can't get enough of tainted heroes, excruciating circumstances, impossible decisions, and Happily Never After. Of course, the dystopia goes in there too. In addition to writing dark and enchanting fiction, Catherine spends the other half of her time in a fiction ghostwriter of almost every genre. As an independent editor through her company, KLH Create Works, and as a fiction co-editor for Burlington's Mud Season Review, she finds much joy and enthusiasm in working closely with other fiction authors on their incredible novels as she does in writing her own. Catherine lives in Vermont with her husband, their young daughter, and two dogs, Sadie and Bruce Willis. Now, is that an odd name? And Catherine told me a story last night about they came across the country from Death Valley, California to Vermont with a 10-month-old and two dogs.
We
in
sure
a car.
Did. It was a trip.
In a car. And my comment was, boy, talk about wanting to shoot yourself.
Wow.
Hello, Catherine.
That's a truck.
And I'd like to spend this time right now and welcome Catherine to the show. Welcome to the show, author Catherine Hudson.
Thank you so much, Jim and Bobby Jean. I am super happy to be here.
Oh, you be welcome.
Excellent.
You listed yourself as an international best-selling author. I don't know. I'm sure that you are.
Thank you.
you would not be the first one we've had on this show. I have to tell you, we've had a couple, huh, Bobby?
Yeah, we have.
And, we've had Pulitzer Prize winners on this show, which is amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah,
not there. I haven't made that.
but you know what? They're all been so kind and so generous with their time and not billing us back for. How will we take out of their life?
No, it's fun. It's fun to do these. I'm happy to be here. This is great.
Well, I have to mea culpa tonight because I did not get a chance to finish your book. I apologize. I will finish it, but this week has been so crazy trying to get everything up and running. But Bobby Jean did finish it.
I did. And I know there's a sequel coming. I didn't know that. At the time that I read the book, I now understand this is the first of a series, but you left a few tantalizing hints that there might be more coming. So you got me.
Oh, good. I love to hear that.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it, Catherine, if you wouldn't mind?
Yes. Sleepwater Beat is the first book in the Blue Helix series. It's LGBT dystopian sci-fi. And that did become an international bestseller in April. This is last April, and it was a sci-fi finalist in the 2019 International Book Awards as well, mm-hmm. which was incredibly exciting. And you know, it's funny, Bobby Jean. I love that you found the tantalizing pieces to drag you into the rest of the series. I originally wrote Sleepwater Beat as a standalone, and it still works. So yes, I've been told fairly well as a standalone. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I was not finished telling the story. So I've got some more characters screaming at me to be written. I'm looking at a release date for book in the series in May of 2020, next year. So you will have to wait too long. So this is a dystopian sci-fi. Takes place in the very near future, about 20 years or so from now. And it's kind of an alternate reality, sort of, you know, as dystopian sci-fi is, taking a look at where things might turn out in mm-hmm. the very near future. Mm-hmm. I played with kind of a sort of a superpower in here with this book. It's called The Beat, or Spinning a Beat. There are certain people in the world who are able to elicit physical responses, and people who hear them deliver a certain type of speech, or you know, the power of the spoken word so to speak, except for I made it a literal power. So Leo Tiefler is the main character in this book, and she has a beat spinning ability. She can make anyone who hears her spin a beat believe absolutely anything she says, even if it's outrageous and fantastical. And she can also, you know, get people to believe whatever she wants about themselves too. So it's kind of like a mind control sort of thing. But she's bumbling and fumbling along with this. And overall, it is a story of finding her place in a world where she can't trust the people who are like her, and she can't trust the people who are not like her. And she's trying to navigate how to trust herself as well at the mm-hmm. same time. Yeah, you know, I explored a few other, you know, social and economic aspects in here as well. Which I don't know if you picked up on those, Bobby Jean.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say 20 years in the future. I really felt like it was being ripped from today's headlines, and it wasn't necessarily subtle. You feel yeah. you are giving us an interesting view of social media, of the, what did you call them? Not info. They're not infomercials. They're infodios, and the 1 minute, you know, message. All of that I found so timely. Like, I would think that's right now. And of yeah. course, the drug point, Tara. Oh my goodness.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And what a cast of characters. I know we want to get to your process rather than necessarily talking specifically about this book, but you really weave such an interesting cast of characters. We catch up with people at different ages and different points in their lives. She's a young woman that gets kind of thrown, or she finds a family of folks of all different ages that have this same ability at different levels. And then we meet some that have lost it, like Lewis. And I just found your characters, your setting, you surprise us quite a bit. I was curious in your, and I don't want to give a lot away, but as you were writing, did you already anticipate some of what would be surprises, or did they surprise your characters surprise you as you were writing?
They always surprise me as I'm writing. I'll tell you, I am a pantser all the way. So I have had to in the last year or so, improve my process of outlining. But most of my work is just, you know, I start at the beginning and go all the way through, and the story builds upon itself and grows and transforms. So most of those things I did not anticipate
okay.
from
okay.
the beginning. Yeah.
But isn't that the mark of a good character, that you can't anticipate what they're going to do?
I love it. I think it's fantastic. And I honestly, that's my favorite part of writing, is not knowing. You know, I will have some ideas and scenes and conflicts in my head that I want to put these characters through, and putting these characters through these sometimes horrific situations is, yes, fun in and of itself, but even more than that, I think, is letting the characters, once I have built them to that point, they get to take over from there. And whether mm-hmm. they crawl out of the hole that I dropped them in or not is completely up to them at that point. And that's my favorite part.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I held my breath a lot. And especially, you know how Jim, in a lot of books recently, it's like the last, the last quarter of the book is just a race to the end.
Right.
This book is like that too.
Well, but if you recall Tim Niederreiter's book, mm-hmm. the last quarter of the book, or at least the last couple chapters, exhausted me to read it.
Well, that's how, and she puts us through, not only is it somewhat exhausting, but it's, some of it is excruciatingly painful, where you know, you almost, for me, I almost wanted to skip that. Like, I don't want to read that, but then I was so captivated. You had me so much in your hand that I'm like, no, okay, I'm going to read to the bottom of this page. Okay. I'll just flip. Okay.
Well, I have here a review, a 5-star review from the San Francisco Review of Books.
Oh, I read that, yeah.
And they say, Catherine's arresting prose style is present from page one throughout this impressive novel. She knows the importance of setting a mood for a dystopian adventure, mystery, adventure extraordinarily unique in unveiling of human powers, and it is a very fine LGBTQ romance, all combined in Catherine's skilled hands to create a very powerful and satisfying novel, and one that has fine potential for a blockbuster film. This author has polished skills. Grady Harp, San Francisco Review of Books, 5-star review. So there you go, Catherine.
There you have it.
and the mere fact that you provided that review, I love it.
Absolutely love it. You said if there is anything I might want you to look at,
that's right.
And just send it along.
Very few of our writers that are on our show actually provide reviews for their books.
Oh well, I was a little proud of that one.
Yeah, and I actually found that when I was researching today. So yeah,
oh, good.
Cool. Yeah,
it's like the one I got in the return. I mean, you know, as a Stephen King is mixed with a Western. So
that's
So at any rate, before we get started, how about a little word from Out West, and then we'll get into the meat of this interview.
The Writer's Block is sponsored by Out West Shop, your online portal to great Western apparel. Log on to outwestshop.com to see the latest in men's and women's Western and country Western inspired apparel and accessories. Click on Out West Live for on-demand live Western music concerts, Western music and equestrian lifestyle radio show podcasts, as well as this one, The Writer's Block. Why not listen while you shop? Use coupon code RADIO to save on your purchases this month. OutWestShop.com delivers the West to you no matter where you hang your hat, door to door and around the world. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
And it is, and I am out West and it's like 32 degrees.
Yeah, we have a cold front coming in here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I got up this morning. It was like 22 degrees outside.
Well, it was snowing in Denver today, or in Colorado and South Dakota, I think, for sure.
That's one state over from me.
So. You know
but
what?
Vermont, now, see. She,
yeah, what about see, Vermont?
Catherine's in Vermont,
was,
so.
Oh, I was just going to say that 38 degrees, or did you say 38? Yeah. Anything above about 25 is nice. Balmy winter day for us up here.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
It's shorts weather. Us Californians, it's shorts weather.
Shorts and Ugg boots, yeah.
So Catherine, you not only write, but you also edit.
Yes.
How did you get into the editing process? Because we hear so many times authors saying, I refuse to edit my own work. And I'm actually one of them. I won't edit my own work because if I made a mistake, I'll miss it again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And to be clear, I do edit my own work, and then I also send it to my editor.
Okay.
I also know how incredibly important it is to have someone else's eyes on your work because they were not involved in the process of creating it. So, you know, I know what I meant by most of the sentences that I've written. And, you know, having a good editor just looking over it, you know, most of the time, it's just copy editing that I need. But even catching those elusive typos or, you know, an oddly phrased sentence here and there, it's incredibly helpful to have someone else's perspective on that. Yeah. And I wouldn't recommend that any author edit their own work only and not have anyone else see it.
No.
Yeah. So I actually, I went to the University of Colorado Boulder, for a bachelor's in creative writing fiction. And that was, I have known since I was 10 that I always wanted to be an author, and I always wanted to, like, that was my dream, the goal, right? And so I followed that through to college, and that was actually when my sort of editing abilities appeared, I guess I could say. So, you know, all that coursework in a creative writing major is writing. Writing is probably, you know, 80% of it. I have a little bit of reading here and there. And then the rest of it is reading the work that was written and submitted by our classmates. And then we would all edit that work. So it, in addition to writing, we also had to, you know, take in 2 stories a week. And we would go through with our red pens on these printed and stapled short stories that our classmates would write and edit them for them. So, you know, at the end of the week, if it was your turn to have your work critiqued and edited by everyone, you would get 10, 12 versions of your work returned to you with everybody's notes, everybody's corrections.
Uh-huh.
But that was an incredible learning experience. Of course, that was also where I had my first experience with pretty much everyone unanimously ripping apart something that I'd written. And I actually very much cherished that moment because it shrank my head back to the size it needed to be. And then I knew that, you know, if I could take that and keep moving forward after my piece was hard and feathered, then I could, you know, pretty much handle anything probably. And I needed to focus a lot on still improving my craft, and that there was still so much more for me to learn. So that was where my experience with editing started. I also had this little group of classmates after our classes ended at CU Boulder. We kind of created this online forum of just about 8 of us, and we continuously submitted our work to the group, and we would all edit for each other after that as well. So it was an ongoing thing. And then I actually had a friend reach out to me. Oh, this was in 2012, probably. And he was writing a research paper for, oh gosh, now that I'm trying to talk about it, I can't remember. He was writing a research paper for young, oh my gosh, I can't remember. He was reading it at a convention of college-aged young people who were, you know, getting up and writing papers about politics and education and civil liberties. And I can't for the life of me remember the name. I'm so sorry. But he asked if I would look over his paper. And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that. And I went over his paper and left notes. And, you know, I was working on grammar things and spelling and punctuation and catching errors. And then I also left a few notes about, you know, this would be so much more of, you know, an argument. It was an argumentative paper. You know, if you really played up these points and went into more detail, you know, the whole shebang, right? And he took my suggestions to heart and actually won the prize, first place at this conference with his research paper, which I didn't expect, and I know that he was very, very excited about it. And so then my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, said, you know, you should really start charging for that. Ever the capitalist. And so he planted that seed in my mind. And eventually got to the point where I decided to open up shop And I was just about ready to publish my very first book at the time. And I was starting to network with other authors, really more than I really ever had before. And I started telling people that I was offering editing services at incredibly low prices. And it just kind of really grew from there, quite a bit. And I haven't had a new editing client in about a year and a half. They've all been just returning clients with their subsequent books over and over. And I have so enjoyed, you know, working with these other authors for some of them for 5 years now, and getting to see their growth in their writing, you know, like looking at the first manuscript that they trusted me with, and then to see where they are now, it's absolutely incredible. And, you know, of course, I give them 98% of the credit. I like to think that maybe some of my suggestions and, you know, showing them ways that they can improve might be that extra 2% there. I originally wanted to be a creative writing professor at the collegiate level, and my life had different plans for me, which is fine, but it turns out in a way that I'm, you know, with the editing, kind of doing that anyway, which is awesome. It came around full circle.
Let me ask you something. I've got several people that I talked to. Well, we also, you know, as writers, we get together and we talk a lot. And one of the things that we disagree, there are several writers that I talk to a lot, and they disagree. Everybody disagrees. So I'm going to ask you, as a writer and as an editor, do you believe in content editing, your story's content, or do you leave that to the writer? And you just fix the grammatical errors and the misspellings and the punctuation. And
I will say that it depends on the manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, I have worked with some authors on their manuscripts where it's their first or second, and they haven't really come into their own as a writer. You know, they're getting there, and they're, you know, it's an uphill battle. So I will go in and not so much, like, I never rewrite something for someone unless, I mean, that's a whole different contract and a whole different project, which I have done, but I don't, it's not editing. But with content editing, that is really, really, really going in and, you know, highlighting sections and leaving notes in the margins and saying, this is not working right here. You know, this is slowing down the pacing. This is
not makes no sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, that's really diving in deep and kind of ripping it apart just to expose what needs to be there. But I will never go in and rewrite something for someone unless it's, you know, obviously grammatically incorrect or, you know, just kind of move the words around some. And I always, you know, if it's a big change, like this dialogue is not, this is not going to work here, how about something like this, and I'll give, you know, like a brief example and say, you play with it, you do what feels right now that I have brought this to your attention, and go work on it, send it back to me, and I'll take a look at it again. And most of the time, I found the majority of authors who I've worked with that have received my response of please try one more time, I like, you're close but it's not quite there, have sent me something back that was, you know, spot on, perfect. And a lot of the time that is, you know, it's the same reason why we need editors, proofreaders at all in the first place, you know, like being so close to the story that they can't see what certain elements aren't working, or, you know, that certain things are off. So they just need that extra little, oh, hey, actually, try this one more time. I know you can do it. Here's just a suggestion. Just play with this. And people have been really receptive to it. So I would say that content editing is not always necessary by any means. But it is an incredibly helpful way of editing a manuscript that is, it's part of that teaching part of editing, right? And not every editor provides it. I don't necessarily think that it should be offered by every editor. I mean, of course, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. there's no point in making yourself miserable, but it's not a necessity, but I think it is an incredible tool and resource for authors to have someone in their corner who's going to say, look, you're doing a fantastic job with this, this, and this. We need to work on this aspect of your writing or this scene or this character, whatever it is. And I've been told that it's been incredibly helpful.
When you commented earlier that you edited, you know, your book, and but then you did send it on to an editor. The comments that your editor gave back to you, were there things that you changed in this book, particular book, that were based on feedback from your editor? Or did your editor kind of say, you know what, you are spot on, you just misspelled, you know, this guy's name here and there, or, you know, you talked about this character, but you didn't give us, you know, the whole story? Or what kind of input did you have from your editor?
Most of it was, you know, the typos and the misspellings and, you know, saying, hey, it's nice to meet you, but I spelled it M-E-A-T.
Yeah. No.
A really great one right there. And that is most of it. If there, and I'm trying to remember if there was any like major, you know, there was something, one of the news report clips that I have throughout part one said something about, I think it was something about like an accidental suicide or something with a news report about a woman's death. And that was brought to my attention a lot. It was like, I'm not sure if accidental suicide is like a thing that they would talk about on the news. Like, it's just phrased incorrectly, you know, or it says something completely different. So it was those kinds of things or the kinds of feedback that I got. But there wasn't really any character or plot
major
changes, I suppose. Yeah.
That was interesting that you used, you gave us in kind of italics, a little like a Greek chorus or some, you know, giving us information that we could only get really supplied that way. Mm-hmm. Did you put those, you know, in as you were writing, or was that an idea that came to you and then you went back in and inserted those? How did that come about?
I did those as I was writing the novel. So I will say Sleepwater Beat started out as a 30,000 word, what is that, long short story?
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was pretty interesting. I was experimenting with how to tell a story by completely rearranging the chronological timeline. So no two scenes in that short story were next to each other chronologically, either backwards or forwards. Mm-hmm. And only about half of those scenes made it into the novel. The short story was a failed experiment, and it did not have those news report clips in it. And that idea more or less came to me when I was realizing that the short story needed to be much, much, much bigger. And that was a way that felt to me like a nice device for world building, without, you know, because Leo is the main character. When we meet her in the very beginning, she's homeless and she doesn't watch the news. She doesn't read the news. She is kind of, you know, living under a rock by choice. And so we weren't going to see these things through her perspective, because also these things didn't have anything to do with her personal growth, I guess you could say. But no, and it was also my way of commenting on, you know, the 24-hour news cycle, and
you gave us a lot of information that helped us hook things together that the characters weren't necessarily hooking together on their own. You gave us a framework, I think. Do you think that you'll continue in the series? You'll continue to use that storytelling piece that way, you know, that way, giving us that kind of information that way?
Yeah, I am. I am planning to. And I think it works really well for the world. And for, thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, no, it did.
It was a way for me to also be maybe a little more sarcastic when addressing some of these social issues without making my characters feel any less real for it, you know? Uh-huh. I did, but before this book came out, I was feeling, really proud of myself. I thought I had, you know, everything is like subtle where it needs to be and unsubtle where it needs to be. And I'm saying just enough that people won't be able to, you know, misinterpret how I'm feeling about, you know, various realms, within society itself. And, but it's still a good story. So, and then when the book came out, I was terrified that I had taking it the opposite direction. I was like, either nobody's gonna get it or everyone's gonna think I just jumped up on my own platform to scream into the void. Like, so fortunately it doesn't seem like anyone took it that way.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, sticking with that format and those little, you know, interludes in there, I really did enjoy that, and I do plan to continue that in the other books in the series. Well,
I hate to break this up, ladies. I've already gotten another cup of coffee and poured some bourbon in it. I'm just but
maybe if you finish the book, Jim.
I very rarely don't finish one, but it's just been crazy this week. And again, my apologies. But right now, I'd like to, we're going to listen to a little word about Creative Edge. And you should know that, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And when they were founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individuals' clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. And that includes the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. And I know, I'm a client. Give them a shot. Creative Edge Publicity. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive Publicists.
And we're back in the studio with Catherine Hudson and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina. And if you want to call and talk to Catherine tonight, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. It'll be answered in our producer's office, and he'll text me over a fact that we have somebody holding on the phone, and we'll get you on the air. Okay, let's get into your process here, Catherine.
Yes.
let's talk about when you find time to write. You have a very young daughter, two dogs, and a husband.
Yes. You know, my daughter is fortunately now old enough to go to preschool. So she is in preschool, normal school hours, 5 days a week, which left me with a breath of fresh air. I love her to death, and also I'm glad that she's in school. She needs it.
You're a typical
mother. We all need it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I know I'm not an outlier, but so I actually write all day.
Oh, do you?
All day, every day. Yeah. I just recently got to the point where I have been able take weekends off again, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And as you were reading in my bio, Jim, I also ghostwrite fiction. So that's a combination of my full-time fiction writing that I do. So I wake up anywhere between 3:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning, depending on what I did the night before. And I sit down, start writing. My daughter wakes up, take her to school. I come back home, and then I have a nice stretch, from about 8:30 to 6 o'clock in the evening. And I just write all day. It's really pretty fantastic.
Wow. Yeah.
Which actually is a great segue into our question of the evening, Bobby Jean.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't you ask it tonight, Jim?
I can do that. Of course, as you're on the air with us, Catherine, you know that the name of the show is The Writer's Block.
Yes.
And have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it? And if you don't, how do you just deal with the fact that you just get to write all the time and never have a problem?
You know, the second part of that question, I like that. I don't deal with it. It just isn't there. I have had writer's block, actually. And it has been quite some time since I have experienced this elusive thing we call writer's block. And, there was a period of time after college when I didn't write a word of fiction for 4 years. That might have been my longest writer's block. I had to go through some of my own soul searching and, kind of rebuilding my life in some ways to be able to feel like I deserved to write fiction. After those 4 years, and I finally got back into it and started to build myself up from there. I think, also having a kid and more responsibilities and less time is actually a major motivator for me. If I have to get a lot of things done in less amount of time than I used to have, I tend to thrive under that pressure. Mm-hmm. That has been very helpful for me inadvertently. I didn't do anything. I mean, I had a kid. But I have found that the best way for me to get through writer's block, but more importantly, to avoid it, is to write every single day, no matter what. If that's, a couple hundred words, or, just the other day I broke my record and I was still 17 words shy of 22,000 words in a day. But that, however much it is, if you don't have a deadline, then, it doesn't matter how much you write, just write every single day. Of course, do have deadlines with my other work, and that is also a huge motivator. But that writing every day, I can't stress enough, is so important. I remember before I started ghostwriting, I had made the commitment to myself. This was January 1st of last year, 2018, that I was going to write 1,000 words every day, Monday through Friday, and write each of the books in the Unclaimed trilogy, which is my dark fantasy trilogy, in 14 weeks. That was the goal. And I stuck to it, and I was able to write, 1,000 words Monday through Friday. And then I started to notice that on the weekends, when I wasn't writing anything, I would get a little cranky and a little irritable and itchy. And it got to the point where my husband would even come up to me and say, "Hey, did you write today?" as a checking in with you, because you're acting weird. You didn't write, did you? And then I realized that, the more I kept up this schedule of, it didn't matter if it was night or day, with a child under 1 year of age, in 2018, she had just turned one. But, you know, that time is hard enough to find anyway with that. So I was really prioritizing making my 1,000-word-a-day minimum quota. And I did it. And I did write that entire trilogy last year. And that was a huge eye-opener for me, just in the sense of, you know, I had never given myself a kind of goal like that with writing. I always just sat down and wrote when I felt like it, or when I felt like, you know, the other pressures of being an adult and life in general weren't more important than wanting to sit down and write. And then I stumbled upon ghostwriting. Kind of just, it was honestly not planned and a little accidental. And I went through this sort of mentorship to kind of learn the ropes of really getting into the mindset of being able to write in a different voice, in a different genre, with somebody else's idea, and to do it quickly. So I went from writing 1,000 words a day, 5 days a week, to now I write about 60,000 words in a week, give or take, you know, a few thousand here or there. And it's incredible, like, what can be accomplished when we as authors, as writers, as creatives, you know, in any of the creative fields, allow ourselves to drop the limitations mm-hmm. that we have convinced ourselves that we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever I heard, I would hear people talking about, oh, I wrote a book in a month. I used to think, you are so full of it. That cannot be possible in any way. And I won't hold it against anyone if they think that of me too. But like, I've been there. I get it.
Well, now you're writing one in a week.
I know. I surpassed that person who was full of it, and I'm bursting at the seams.
Yeah. Now you should probably find all those people and apologize.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I keep my opinions to myself.
Catherine, how do you manage? I understand that you're writing all day, but you're writing your own books. You might be ghostwriting for somebody. You might be editing for somebody. Do you kind of schedule your day so you get it all done? You know,
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that, the scheduling part, took a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't always sure, you know, when the best time of day was for me, or how much time I needed to spend on any one project on any given day. So, turns out for me, that I always start with, the ghostwriting, because mm-hmm. those require larger word counts in a smaller amount of time. So I get through that and I hit my minimum for the day that I've set for myself to meet these deadlines. And I'm usually left with 3 hours at the end of the day after that. So depending on what editing work I have, you know, I'll spend a little time on the editing after that. And then a little time on my own books. I do reserve the weekends for writing my own books, which I don't consider work. And, you know, honestly, I can't say that there's a single thing about what I do and my career now that I don't enjoy. It's just, mm-hmm. I just get to work with words all day, every day. And most of them I am creating. But I do on the weekends. I don't touch anything else. And I will still wake up early, write in the morning, and then I will write when our daughter takes her nap, which is, you know, 3 hours most of the time. And so I get my own stuff out that way. And that just feels like taking a breather, you know, like I don't have these deadlines for my own work creeping up behind me in quite the same way. And so far, that's been working out really well. I find that if, like, once I hit about 8 o'clock, my brain is useless. 8 o'clock at night, PM.
Let's look at our clocks now because we got about 2 minutes left. And that last 2 minutes, Catherine, if you wouldn't mind, tell our audience where they can reach you and your website and all that other good stuff.
Of course. My website is CatherineHudsonFiction.com. You can find out all kinds of cool stuff about me and subscribe to my newsletter there as well. And I'm on Facebook at Catherine Hudson Fiction. That's my author page. Catherine Hudson Fiction on Instagram. Exquisitely Dark on Twitter. I am most active on Facebook. And my books, all six of them, can be found across the board, wherever good books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, Google, most of the others, too.
Okay. Well, you know, it's been a hoot, haven't you? And I apologize that I did not make it through your book. That normally does not happen.
That is okay. It's all right.
But it does happen occasionally.
It's okay.
You know, it's like when we all have 16 different irons in the fire, that happens.
Yeah, I feel you. You know, I didn't listen to one of the previous episodes, so I guess.
There you go.
Jim, it's okay. We'll just wipe the plate clean.
Well, at any rate, thank you. Thank you for spending this time with us. It was great having you on. I know it's getting late there. It's almost 11 o'clock.
And, worth it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you can drain your glass of wine before you go to bed, I guess.
Oh, I'm still working on it.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, again, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We thoroughly enjoyed having you. At least I speak for myself. And Bobby Jean, I'm sure that's true for you.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Very welcome. And well, I'll say hello to Mickey for you.
Oh, perfect. I like it. I'll do the same.
Okay. And next week, of course, Bobby, you will not be with us. It'll be Rest Weekend. And that's the third Thursday.
Yes, already.
It's the 16th. I can't believe it. It was the first October. Thursday, it was the second. So
yeah, I know.
So at any rate, Bobby, it's always a pleasure.
It is. Thank you. Great fun.
And I fortunately everything is fixed now, so I'm good to go. Kinda. Right.
So. Perfect.
With that being said, again, good night, Catherine. Thank you again for joining us. And for Bobby Jean and myself, Jim Christina, tune in next week. We have Russ Avison, and I will have to post the name of our guest yet again because I have not got it. It's not been very static around here. So with that being said, again, thank you so much for joining us this evening with Catherine Hudson, and we are out of here.